The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
A European Drug Enforcement Agency has seized more than 2 billion euros worth of drugs in the first 6 months of 2021. That's more than twice what was seized in all of 2020. It was set up in the 2000s and it's called the Maritime Analysis and Operations Centre Narcotics. It's a coalition of EU countries tasked with combating drug smuggling by sea. And I'm joined now from Portugal by the head of that agency, who says that Irish gangs are at the top of the pyramid in the European drugs trade. And he should know, given that he is a former assistant Garda commissioner, as well as now being head of the Maritime Analysis and Operations Centre Narcotics. Michael O'Sullivan, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much. Good morning.
Michael, before we get into the discussion of your current role, can you give us a little bit of a sense of your own background? You have been in the business of stopping the drugs trade for a long time.
Yeah, I guess I've 44 years in law enforcement, and most of that has been spent in operating in, I suppose, drug enforcement and working with the old drug squad and the current Garda National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau, which I was in charge of. And I subsequently became an assistant commissioner, and I subsequently came here to be the director of the Maritime Analysis Operations Centre.
Across that 40-year period, has there been a significant change in who the key, let's look at Ireland first, who the key Irish players have been, or is it the same cast of characters?
Some of them are the same cast of characters. I suppose the catalyst was during the Veronica Guerin investigation and post that, when CAB came along, the Criminal Assets Bureau. A lot of those prominent Irish criminals fled to Europe, where the laws were more lax, and as a result contributed to sending drugs back to Ireland and built empires, but more importantly, interacted with people from the Netherlands and Colombia and Mexico and various other parts of South America. So they built up that nucleus in which they, for want of a better term, formed a company, organized cartels, got organized and got more efficient and imported more drugs into Europe and subsequently onto Ireland. So they're familiar faces, people I've known a long time, 30 odd years.
And people you've arrested as well, aren't they?
Yeah, some of them I've arrested. I knew them personally. Some back in the 80s, I arrested a number of them, yeah.
Including members of the Kinahan gang?
Yeah, I arrested Christopher Kinahan back in 87, 88. And he subsequently got, he was selling heroin at the time. He had a safe flat in Clontarf, and it was sort of below the radar, and it was the nerve centre for the distribution of heroin throughout all of Dublin. And we managed to intercept him and arrest him. And he subsequently served a sentence. He went on then to go to Holland, where he continued with what he's doing.
Does all of this activity make you, to some extent, a marked man?
Look, I suppose threats are what it's an occupational hazard. The guard on the beat gets threats. You join the police, and if you get threats, you know you're doing something right. It's part and parcel of what we do, and it's just, as I say, an occupational hazard. I think somebody said that when you're getting threats, you know you're doing something right. But it goes with the territory. Guards are getting, law enforcement officials throughout the globe are getting threats and have suffered threats.
But these are threats. There's two kinds of threat. There's the kind of threat which has no teeth, and there are threat from people who have given previous evidence that they can carry it out. You don't fear any of it?
You take it on board that it's out there, and you're always conscious of it, but it can't stop you doing what you do. Even as a young detectives today and young guards, if they get threatened by organized criminals, by violent criminals or criminals who are capable of carrying out those threats, you have a choice. You either do your job or you step back. And if you're going to step back, there's no point in you being in that role. So you know, who else is going to do it? So you just take it. You take it on the chin and you continue to do what you do. You have to do that or else the system fails.
So in your current role, then you have essentially moved further up the supply chain. You're now tasked with dealing with all of the drugs that are flowing into Europe as an entity. First of all, from whence do they come?
Well, all of the cocaine comes from South America, in particular Bolivia and more so Colombia, South America, other areas of South America. And when you look at it, we engage here, just to give a by way of background to Mayoc, we're the sort of nerve center for the fight against drugs coming to Europe. We're trying to get it. We're representing some 7 European countries and coordinating their assets, and we're working hand in hand with the Drugs Enforcement Agency of the US. So we're trying to coordinate the assets of the, when I say that, I mean the vessels and the law enforcement people and the customs who try to intercept the vessels, whether they're coming from South America or indeed North Africa. And it's about upstream disruption. For example, if you intercept the yacht with a ton of cocaine coming from South America, and that's worth, you know, that could be worth 7 or 8 years work on the streets of Ireland. So it is, they are at the most vulnerable when they're on the high seas. And but obviously there's a bulk load there, and they're at its greatest purity. But when it lands, once you get it to shore, it's gone, it's dispersed, sent through various gangs and various guises in various locations, and you could spend years trying to get it all back again.
Is there a particular pattern to the manner in which it is shipped? Is it, as you say, individual private yachts that have been bought or stolen, or is it smuggled on big container ships? What's the pattern?
Well, the pattern has changed over the years because the cocaine market has changed. There's more money around. The cocaine market in Europe alone is estimated between 13 and 14 billion euros. That's just for cocaine alone. So what the organized crime groups have done is they have sort of are buying in bulk. You will still get some yachts, but more importantly, what they're doing is a number of criminal organizations will get together, buy 3 or 4 tons. That will be shipped from South America across the Atlantic. And a plan will be made by which that ship may never touch down in Europe. A plan will be made where a go-fast, a very large speedboat or indeed a trawler may meet at certain coordinates, offload the shipment, and then bring it to Europe. So that shipment is subdivided among the various criminal groups who have put in the money for the several tons and then disseminated throughout Europe. So buying in bulk obviously has its advantages, and that the profits are far greater than sending over a yacht that could maybe carry a ton, ton and a half at most. So if you can get 5 tons into Europe, it just quadruples the profits. The profits are huge. At the same time, your eggs are in the one basket. If you lose 5 tons, it's a very costly loss.
And this is where you come in. You mentioned the dispersal of the Irish gangs following the creation of the Criminal Assets Bureau. How significant are those Irish gangs in the criminal makeup of Europe's drug smuggling?
They're very significant. They've been around a long time. They're very capable, they're very devious, and they're very well organised. So they're some of the higher echelons of some of Europe's organised crime groups. And their senior management team, for want of a better term, are made up by Irish criminals who have progressed up the ranks or had the business acumen and the skill set to see the developing markets and to have the wherewithal to amalgamate various criminal groups and to sort of get to the top of the empire.
You describe having been doing this for not this singular role, but being in the job of preventing drug importation and drug sales for 4 decades. You're now trying to interrupt and prevent a multiple billion euro industry. At any point, do you despair? Do you say this is too big to stop?
No, because I certainly don't despair. This is a bit of a war of attrition. This is about trying to wear the groups down, trying to destabilize, disrupt, dismantle the various groups, which we've successfully done in 4 decades at various levels. And you there's no alternative. You can't give up and say, well, we let it run and let the place be awash with cocaine or heroin, and the effects on society would be devastating. So you don't despair, you know, you just, and, you know, whether you're working in law enforcement or drugs or other crime and people manage to evade justice, if you're in the business of despairing, you shouldn't get into law enforcement.
What was the reaction from your colleagues across Europe to somebody getting the top job from a relatively small jurisdiction by comparison to some of the bigger European countries?
In this case, size doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're from France or whether you're from the UK. If you get the job, you either perform or you don't. And if you don't perform, it will be difficult to get your contract renewed, etc. But so they look at the candidates, and it is about, I think, your capabilities in law enforcement as distinct from the country or the size of the country or the size of the force that you came from. It is the skill set and the capabilities of doing the job and that they are interested in.
Final thing, Michael O'Sullivan, have you seen any effect on the drugs trade with COVID? Because every legal industry has had an impact. What of the illegal industries?
When COVID kicked in March of last year, the transportation of cocaine increased dramatically because they were of the opinion that the navies and the law enforcement would be distracted and various other organizations would be distracted because of COVID and would be working perhaps at half strength. So they increased the flow of cocaine. I think in one 48-hour period, there were four vessels intercepted by the Spanish, which gives you an idea. You know, when everybody else is told stay at home and, you know, social distancing and all that, these people get out, as do all law enforcement and naval services, and get out and do what they have to do and intercept vessels. So it probably was a bit of a surprise to the South Americans that COVID didn't restrict the operational effectiveness of law enforcement in Europe. And we have seen a huge increase. We have probably seized more vessels and more cocaine in 6 months of this year than we did last year. And last year it was over 2 billion. So last year was a record year. And when you see what they're trying to do, and when you see the ways they do it, they sent in a submarine, which we intercepted about a year ago. They are working at every possible avenue in an effort to get the drugs into Europe. And we're trying to intercept those avenues.
Michael, thank you very much. That's Michael O'Sullivan, who's head of the Maritime Analysis and Operations Centre for Narcotics, based in Portugal.